This podcast contains the personal stories, opinions, and experiences of its speakers rather than those of Breast Cancer Now. You might be planning a trip for 2026, but travel can be complicated when you're affected by cancer. I've just had a brilliant conversation with Fiona McRae from travel insurance brand Insurance With, which was developed to support people with medical conditions, including breast cancer. Fiona talked about her personal experience of breast cancer and her personal experience with travel and travel insurance after her diagnosis. One really hopeful thing to come out of the conversation was that, obviously subject to a full medical screening, in many cases you will be able to get travel insurance. So whilst you might have had a progression on your scan, for example, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't go for that really longed for holiday. So enjoy the conversation with Fiona. Today we're talking about travel, something that becomes even more precious and special when you're living with or recovering from breast cancer. However, travel insurance can be a minefield when you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, and particularly metastatic or secondary breast cancer. Fiona was diagnosed with breast cancer herself in 2005, and she's been living with secondary breast cancer since 2020, so she knows firsthand what it means to be able to travel when you're seriously ill. We're going to be talking about how to get travel insurance, understanding health questionnaires and confusing terminology, and finding the right balance between cancer treatment and quality of life. Fiona, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Laura.
So let's start with some quick fire travel questions. What's your favourite place that you've been to in the last few years?
Probably Le Touquet in France. It's easy to get to. Pack the car up on the Eurostar. It's, yeah, food's amazing. Lovely beach.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
What's the one place you go back to time after time?
At the moment, it's Le Touquet. We go there probably about two or three times a year because it's so easy to get to. And it's just so lovely.
What's the one place you've never been to but you'd love to visit?
Oh, that's going to have to be Japan.
Oh, yes. And why is it important for people affected by cancer or serious illness to be able to travel?
I always say that it helps you forget about your illness. It can be, I find that I'm just Fiona on holiday. I'm not Fiona with cancer. Nobody knows my story, and you're just a normal person, and you can sort of forget about all of the hospital appointments and things like that.
That is so true. I really, really agree with you there. I've been on holidays where I just feel like I've got a little bit of sunshine, a little bit of out of the normal routine, and you just never just walk into the lounge and see a letter, an appointment letter. Yeah. And so they just aren't quite the usual reminders that you're due in hospital the following week or whatever.
Yeah, so it's just so important to get away from that.
So you, like me, are living with secondary or metastatic breast cancer. You were first diagnosed more than 20 years ago in 2005.
Yeah.
What was life like before you were diagnosed with the primary breast cancer, and how did you come to be diagnosed?
So I travelled a lot, travelled extensively through South America, Guatemala. You know, it was, I spent my life sort of travelling and having a good time. I was a broker at Lloyd's of London, and then I got married and had a baby, and it was probably when I was about 20 weeks pregnant I noticed changes in my breast, and I went to the doctor and it's all normal, and just this went on. Then my son was born, and then sort of settling in to be a new mum, and the changes in my breast, and it wasn't a lump, it was a thickening, and I could never breastfeed very well out that breast. And eventually, when everything settled down, Cameron, my son, was about 5 months old, and I went back to my doctor. And I think, thankfully, I saw a locum, actually, who said, well, actually, I don't know, so I'm going to refer you to the one-stop breast clinic at Barts. And I was on a two-week pathway, and I went there, and I was diagnosed that day. I had Cameron with me in the pram, because I honestly thought it was going to be nothing, because I'd been reassured for months and months. So that was quite a shock. And then having a 5-month old baby, dealing with chemotherapy and...
Yeah, what was that like? Because were you breastfeeding? Did you have to get around that?
Yeah, so I had to stop breastfeeding and then obviously straight onto chemotherapy, had 6 months of that. And then my oncologist said, okay, that's fine. We're going to have a break now. I think you need to go off, have a little holiday and be a family. Come back. We'll do some surgery and we'll do your radiotherapy. And that's when I discovered I couldn't get travel insurance. So, yeah, and I just, because I hadn't physically had the cancer removed, I found I was uninsurable.
Right.
And as I understood risk, because I was a Lloyd's broker, I understood risk and I thought, well, yeah, I can see how I'm a higher risk, but I can't see how I'm a uninsurable risk. Mm. And that sort of sowed the seed of thinking, actually, there's probably a better way to do this. The questions I was being asked to see whether I could get travel insurance or not just didn't seem to make sense. At the time, they'd ask you, well, how many times have you visited the doctor in the last 12 months? And if it was more than five, you were uninsurable. And I thought, well, of course I've been to the doctor. I've had cancer.
And
I've
got cancer. We shouldn't be de-incentivized or disincentivized from going to the doctor, right?
Yeah, so none of it made sense to me, but I was still sort of dealing with babies, cancer and everything like that. We did go off on holiday with no cover. We were going to the south of France. Again, car, Eurostar.
Yeah.
That's where the seed was sown.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about the insurance company that was born from that moment in a little while. But just going back to your cancer diagnosis. So your son that you talked about there, who was a five-month-old baby, has just turned 21, which feels super
it
symbolic.
It was just so symbolic because I remember him in the room. He was in the pram with me when I got my diagnosis. And I remember looking at him in this pram and thinking, I don't know if I'll ever see you go to school because, you know, and then all of a sudden I've seen him go to school, finish school, A-level, secondary school, start university and then turn 21 on Friday.
Yeah.
Well,
congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a real milestone, isn't it?
It was a massive milestone. I think the next one's seeing him graduate, hopefully.
Well, that's not too far off.
No.
So you had treatment for your primary breast cancer and then sadly, during COVID in 2020, you did find out that you had secondary breast cancer.
Yeah.
Was there a lead up to that? And how did you find out that it had come back?
Yeah, so I took a hormone blocker, Antrasol, I was on tamoxifen for 2 years and then I was in a chemical menopause. So they moved me to Antrasol for a further 8 years. After about 3 years, I think looking back now in retrospect, there was changes that I should have been alerted to, like, you know, sort of along my mastectomy scar and things like that. And I wasn't probably as vigilant as I should have been.
What sort of changes along your scar?
There was almost what I thought was a little spot, but it didn't. It was like a little, again, it wasn't anything specific, but I probably should have got that checked out. But it was really a cough that didn't go away. And I had a lung x-ray and it came back clear. And I was being seen so they said, well, it must be asthma, allergic to asthma. So I was seeing a respiratory consultant about that. And it was only when we couldn't get on top of the asthma, she decided to do a scan. And that's where we found lung mets. Right. And then I had a further PET CT scan and they found it in my bones as well.
Wow. And that was in
2020. Yeah, so that was 15 years from my primary diagnosis.
Wow. And what happens with lung metastasis? Because I don't know too much about that.
Yeah.
I know a bit more about bone because that's what I have, unfortunately. But with lung metastasis, what kind of treatment is available?
It's the same as sort of bone. So I'm on palbociclib, letrozole, and thankfully it's put it all to sleep.
Okay,
and
amazing.
It has been, you know, for the past 5 years.
Touch wood. That's fantastic news.
Yeah.
And how did it feel finding out 15 years after that initial primary breast cancer diagnosis that it had come back and spread?
I was completely shocked. I always say to people, I thought I got away with it. Mm. And I knew that at the back of my mind, I'd heard of some people that it had come back, you know, 10, sometimes 15, sometimes 20. But when I spoke to my doctors, they would say, yeah, but you've got to be quite unlucky. But the more I meet people and talk to them now, it's not really unlucky. There's quite a lot of people it happens to.
Absolutely. I think we meet more people because we have, because it's happened to us. So yeah. I don't want to scare anyone to think that it's going to happen to them. But
no,
it is, of course, always really important to just look out for those signs and symptoms of secondaries and anything. You know, you talked about a cough that didn't go away.
Yeah.
And that's the element that we need to be aware of, isn't it? The doesn't go away element, because everyone gets a cough every so often. But if you still got it after 2 months, then that's you really need to get it checked out.
But what I do also want to add is, you know, that secondary breast cancer is also very treatable, and it's an immense shock. And you look at old data and you just think that's it. But I think we both know lots of people that have been living long and fulfilling, still working through secondary breast cancer diagnosis. So again, it's treatable. And it's not I think initially I was terrified of going back into the full on chemotherapy and it's, you know, it's far more targeted now.
Yeah, I think that's the thing about a lot of people I know who have secondary breast cancer is that we're having treatments that are a little bit kinder because they're long-term, they're full-life treatments. So, you know, people do have chemotherapy, but it's often a later resort than, you know, than the tablets and injections that we are fortunate enough to, you know, be able to have.
Yeah.
And how are you now at the moment?
I'm doing well at the moment. So, yeah, you know, you live scan to scan.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'm well.
Yeah. Cancer sometimes propels us to do really interesting, different things. And in your case, you did something quite unique. You set up a travel insurance company. So this was in 2010, in between your primary and your secondary diagnosis.
Yeah.
You set up the company called Insurance With.
So it's a travel insurance brand rather than a company.
Could you explain that then? Because I don't know the difference.
So it's an insurance company tends to be somebody that sort of covers the risk. We're a travel insurance brand.
Okay.
So we have an underwriter that sits behind.
So you talked before about when you had primary breast cancer, you seemed to be unable to get insurance.
Yeah.
So how did that then segue into you starting this brand, and how does the brand work?
So I did a lot of research, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, talking about the questions that were being asked to ascertain the risk that I was posing, didn't seem to make sense to me. And I was doing a lot of research about companies that offered travel insurance. And I came across TIFF Group, who I work with insurance with. And they asked me, they were actually looking at their own in-house medical screening system. And they asked me to join them, develop a brand, and also on the back of that, develop this in-house medical screening system. So it's actually the screening system behind the brand that makes the difference in the price that you pay. So probably 85, 90% of the travel insurance brands that you'll see in the market, including all the comparison sites, all use the same medical screening system.
Yeah.
So it's so the you're not going to get the outcome is not going to be that much different from across all the brands, because the risk analysis is all done under that one medical screening system. So if you're quoted, say, £5,000 with one company using that medical screening system, you're not suddenly going to be quoted £500 with another.
Yeah. So to go back to basics for someone who's listening with breast cancer, who needs to get insurance to go on holiday. First of all, why do we need travel insurance? And is it a legal requirement to have it, or is it?
No, it's not a legal requirement. But if you travel abroad, say you're traveling to Europe and you've got your European health card, which is called the GHIC now, you will get the same treatment in any of those European countries as a national of that country. And what they pay, you would pay. So it's not always free. So, for example, in Greece, the EHIC wouldn't, or GHIC doesn't cover nursing care. You would have to pay separately for a private nurse. So it's normally expected that the family would come in and feed and wash the patient, so that none of that is covered. In France, for example, you pay for ambulances and things like that. But one thing that is absolutely not covered is any repatriation back to the UK. And a lot of people will say, oh, it doesn't matter, I can get the next, you know, budget flight home. But it's not always as simple as that. And if, you know, if you're not well enough to get on that flight, or you look like you're not well enough, you might be asked for a fit to fly letter and things like that. Or you might be fit enough to fly, but the airline insists you have a doctor or a nurse escort with you. None of that is covered under those health insurance. So if something does go wrong when you're abroad with your health, that's what where travel insurance steps in, as well as the usual baggage delays and things like that.
Cancellations.
But in my experience, and a lot of people, again, the argument I hear is, well, I'm not suddenly going to need my cancer treatment when I'm abroad.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. You're not. But what you will or could get, and because we all are immunocompromised if you're taking any sort of cancer medication, is the likelihood of you picking up an infection or something related to the treatment of your cancer. And if you don't have travel insurance, and if you hadn't declared your cancer, that's not going to be covered under standard travel insurance.
Yeah.
Because if you exclude cancer from your travel insurance, you're not just excluding cancer and the treatment of it, you're excluding anything that can be related to the treatment of your cancer.
So when I was first diagnosed with secondary breast cancer and I couldn't get insurance, but I had this trip booked to France, I just went to France uninsured after much consideration and knowing that I was feeling really well, not many side effects, and that I also had the GHIC. I just went to France. I thought it was only France. That should be fine. And it was fine.
Is
that something that someone could do if they really can't get health insurance?
Yeah, just be aware of the country that you're travelling to in Europe. Understand what the local healthcare is like and what you would be responsible for. But also be aware that how would you get home if you couldn't get on a flight?
Yeah.
So France, for example, you're either in the car, you know, would you be able to get on the train? I don't know how strict they are at Gare du Nord letting people back on, you know, if you're visibly unwell. I don't know what they're like. But things like that. So if the worst happened, how would you get home?
Mm-hmm.
Consider that.
Yeah, exactly.
That would always be my advice. So, for example, maybe don't pick a remote Greek island for that uninsured holiday.
So just going back, and I'm going to come back to, you were talking about medical questionnaires. I'm going to come back to that. So when I had my primary breast cancer in 2012 and I was cured from that to all intents and purposes for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And during that, immediately after the I finished chemotherapy, I think it was harder to get travel insurance. But once the cancer was clear, especially after a couple of years, I started to travel again, and I got travel insurance for, you know, a normal price. So I could probably get annual travel insurance multi-trip for £55, which was amazing. But I'm fairly sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it excluded cancer. So if anything to do with the cancer, my cancer were to come back, or anything related to that breast cancer that I had would not have been covered. Is that a thing? So if someone has had breast cancer, but they don't have secondary breast cancer, and they can go to a normal travel insurance company, would you advise that they do that kind of travel insurance where the health, where cancer is excluded, or am I thinking of it wrongly? And in fact, I had declared it, but it just didn't affect the cost.
It could well be that. So you'd declare it. So if you, say you're 3 years clear of your diagnosis, even if you're taking something like tamoxifen or anthrazole or one of those drugs, the likelihood that you're going to be charged an additional premium once you're sort of clear of everything other than that drug, that you're going to be charged an awful lot, you know, on top of that, is quite unlikely. You would be able to run that through, you know, comparison site, get a decent price. Yeah. And no matter, you would be able to get a decent price on it. It's really important that you do declare your breast cancer and make sure it's declared, because there are side effects to the drugs that we take, you know, sort of DVTs and things like that. So if you are, and if you don't declare your cancer and you end up with a DVT on holiday, that's not going to be covered.
And that's deep vein thrombosis, which can come about from flying.
Yeah.
So maybe I was misremembering getting treatment, because I'm sure I would have declared that I had breast cancer and was on tamoxifen when I was getting travel insurance. But you're right, it probably just didn't affect the cost. But however, when I was then diagnosed with secondary breast cancer, it was actually in the summer of 2022, and I had a flight. I had a trip booked to France for a week, and my previous insurance had just run out. And I tried everywhere, and the cheapest quote that I could get for travel insurance with anyone was, I think, £1,300 for a week in France, which, you know, is insane. And I actually couldn't initially get travel insurance with and I think that was because, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd only just started my treatments. And whilst nothing might have happened to me related to the cancer, there was every likelihood that I could have had a reaction or something could have happened with the drugs that I've just started.
That's
Is that correct?
Yeah, so insurance with our medical screening, what we would like to see would be at least 4 to 6 weeks on any new drugs to make sure side effects are managed, because that's what's going to cause us the problems. It's the side effects of the drugs. And we've got to make sure that the side effects are managed.
So if you're freshly diagnosed with secondary breast cancer, for example, let's say your case where you'd found that it had spread to your lungs and your bones, would you be able to insure someone for that, or are you technically uninsurable for that period of 4 to 6 weeks?
Until you start, if you're waiting to start a treatment, depending on how well you are, if your bloods are still good, you should be able to get covered before you start that treatment, if you're waiting to start it. But it's that period of once you've started it to make sure the side effects are managed.
So it's really about the treatment and the side effects.
Yeah.
That's what would cost money to insure, if something happens to you as a result of those side effects, particularly infections and things like
that. You know, if you've got your, you know, low blood count and things like that, that can really make you quite unwell quite quickly. And, you know, infections take hold very quickly. So you've got to be on top of it and make sure that, you know, you understand that. And that's why, you know, we always ask about sort of your blood counts and things like that to make sure that they are.
And is that the same for someone with primary cancer, but they're going through chemotherapy, for example? Yeah. And can someone travel and be insured if they're having chemotherapy?
Yeah, they can. But again, they've got to at least have the first one under their belt to make sure that side effects are managed.
Yeah.
And they understand, you know, when's the best time for them in that period? Because one thing they don't want to do is go on holiday and end up just spending it in their hotel room because they just feel awful.
Or in hospital.
Or even just, you just feel under the weather and don't feel like doing anything. So you're just in, you end up staying in your hotel room. So it's always good to understand what is going to be your good week.
Yeah. And you could, I'm assuming from what you've said, you could go away on holiday abroad before you start chemo, if you are well enough to.
Yeah.
And should you always talk to your medical team?
Absolutely.
To get
insurance,
approval?
All insurance. If your team doesn't agree with your travel plans, your insurance would be null and void.
Right. So there's a question in that medical questionnaire, which I'll ask you about now, that says, has your medical team advised you not to travel? I think it's something like that, isn't it? And if you say...
If you say yes, then you wouldn't be offered cover.
Got it. Okay. So you just wouldn't be offered it. Yeah. Right. So talk us through that medical questionnaire. So basically you go on the Insurance With website and you put in your name, your date of birth, the dates that you want to travel. And then you get asked all these medical questions.
So we're the Insurance With medical screening, which is our in-house brand called Protective. Where we're different, we ask what medication you take.
Yes.
So that sort of helps people to put all the medications, because they know the medications, and then we link the condition to that medication. And it's sort of a bit of an aid memoir as well for people to remember, to help them to declare everything. So we ask the medications first, and then we'll start asking questions. And we ask a lot more questions than anybody else. But that's because we want to understand the risk of that person. Yeah. It's trying to get that personalised risk instead of saying, well, everybody with secondary breast cancer is the same risk, but we're not.
Yeah.
You know, we're all different risks. And as you know, cancer's a very individual condition, and we all react differently to our treatments and things like that. So it's about trying to understand that person's individual risk, and that's why we ask a lot more questions.
Got it. And then based on the result of that questionnaire, screening, sorry, you then get a quote for this is how much it's going to cost you for either the week that you're going away to wherever you're going in the world, and there's different costs according to different countries that you might travel to, different levels of cover. And then you can also, there may also be an option if you want annual multi-trip insurance, which is something I have now managed to get. So it was actually, luckily for me, it was only those, I think the first few weeks after I first started my treatment for secondary breast cancer. And I'm sure if I need to change my drugs to change to a new treatment, I would then probably not be able to get insurance again for a while, perhaps.
Until you were stable on your new drugs.
Exactly, but since then, I've been able to get annual multi-trip insurance with Insurance With, which has been fantastic. But it does mean that I've been through this medical screening many, many times. So it asks you what drugs you're taking. Mm-hmm. And then from those drugs, it says, okay, well, you're taking letrozole. So is this related to secondary breast cancer? And then it will says things like, what was the outcome of your latest scan?
Yeah.
Has the cancer shrunk? Has the cancer completely gone away? Has the cancer remained stable? Has the cancer grown or progressed? And they're quite scary questions. It's quite it's quite daunting to go through that that medical questionnaire. But as you said, it really asks you those questions to figure out where you're at.
The risk. And we've done a lot of work with users, charities, to try and help so the questions aren't triggering. And we've done a lot, you know, we need to ask certain things, and we do need to ask, understand the outcomes of scans. And, you know, we do recognize that it's a difficult question, but we still need to understand that. In, you know, if we don't, it's, well, we just got to assume that everybody's had progression then, and you're all in that risk rating.
Of course.
And that's not what we want to do. And even if you have had progression, that doesn't mean you're not going to get cover.
No.
You know, what would sort of prevent you getting cover at that stage would be if you've just started the new drugs for progression. If they're saying, well, actually have a break, then start your new drugs, then you can get cover. So it's the drugs, really. And, you know, where you are in that cycle, that's sort of what we're more interested in, because it's the side effects that are really going to give us the problems.
And speaking of the side effects, so one of the really big ones that you mentioned before is immunocompromising drugs. And one of those, for example, that I'm taking is ribociclib. And it means that I have really, really low neutrophils or white blood cells, and can be very often neutropenic, which, you know, is when your body basically can't fight an infection. So often if I go somewhere long haul, really far away from home, or somewhere that I know that I'm not going to be in a big city and I'm not going to be easily close to a hospital mm-hmm. where I could get treatment if I needed it, I will discuss with my medical team to have a treatment break.
Yeah.
So it might be just that I stop. So I take ribociclib for 3 weeks on and then 1 week off, 3 weeks on, mm-hmm. 1 week off. And it might be that I just take 2 weeks off or 3 weeks off instead so that I can go to the other side yeah. of the world or wherever it is, enjoy my holiday, knowing that my body is strong enough to yeah. fight any infection that might occur. Mm-hmm. Is that something that, I'm not going to ask whether you would advise it, because obviously that's yeah. not what you do, but yeah. is that approach, I don't know, would you say that that's a kind of...
I've done it.
You've done it, yeah.
And I think it's quite a sensible thing to do. If you want, you know, if that's what you want to do, but you know, discuss it with your team.
Yeah.
Your team are the best people. Your medical team are the best people yeah. to advise you on that. But it is a sensible approach. But one of the other things that we've got an insurance with policy is something called Air Doctor. So no matter where you are in the world, you register, you know, it comes free with your policy. Mm. And it's an app. And say... your temperature's up. It's a non-emergency. Sorry. If you've got an emergency, yeah. you've got to, you know, get to hospital, call the number, call the emergency number, and they will advise you what to do. If you've got a non-emergency medical situation, say you've cut your foot on the beach, looks a bit red, your temperature's up, but it's not that up, and you just want a bit of advice. So you can either have a video call with a doctor, all, you know, English speaking, or they can, depending on where you are in the world, they might be able to recommend you go to an English speaking doctor locally, and they can have a look at your foot. They might give you a prescription for antibiotics and things like that. Okay. So there are other things on the policy to support it. But I will stress that is for non-emergency yeah. Situations.
Yeah,
if you're worried at all, it's phone the emergency line yeah. straight away.
And one thing that's really, it's like, it might sound complicated to people, but so let's say if you go on holiday and you break your leg or you mm-hmm. have a car crash.
Yeah.
In a very unlikely event that would happen, some people might say, I'm not going to get insurance because it's really expensive. Mm-hmm. And then they break their leg and they say, well, that's nothing to do with cancer. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter that I've got cancer because that, you know, me having a car crash and breaking my leg or whatever is completely unrelated. But actually, almost everything can come back to cancer, can't it? Because it might take you longer to recover from that car crash because of the cancer yeah. treatment. You might get an infection and mm-hmm. the reason that it would take you longer to recover would be because of the cancer treatment. So actually everything
can be related back to your yeah. cancer because it does, the treatment does affect your whole body.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, particularly if you've got bone mets, is that bone weaker because... Mm. You've got bone mets.
Right.
You know, is it near to where your bone met is?
Yeah.
But even if you don't have bone mets and you break a leg, it's, you know, if your treatment gives you low neutrophils, then your healing is just not going to be as yeah. quick as somebody that doesn't have that. And then again, it's about repatriating you back home. That would take longer because, you know, you've got to be well enough to get into the air ambulance because that's, you know, that's still, you've still got to be sort of well enough for them to be able to transfer you.
Yeah. So basically you always need to have insurance.
You do, yeah.
3 years ago, I did quite a lot of reading about this because I was so confused about the insurance yeah. situation after having secondary breast cancer. And I seem to recall something like if you are in a really bad accident or if you, the very unlikely event that you die on mm-hmm. holiday somewhere really, really far away, I think it can cost hundreds of thousands to have your body sent back or just to be repatriated if you're alive but very, very unwell. And actually that is completely outside of most people's reach
yeah.
If they don't have insurance.
Every summer you see GoFundMe pages for people that have gone abroad and have been taken ill and they've either not declared a medical condition so their insurance is null and void or somebody hasn't taken out insurance and they've fallen from a balcony. Mm. And, you know, every summer there's something in the papers, and it's people are funding to try and get their family member back yeah. home, because it's, you know, an air ambulance from Europe, and don't quote me on this, but you're probably talking about, you know, 40 odd thousand pounds.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not loose change.
And if you're talking US.
US, it's,
or
yeah, yeah.
South America or wherever, mm-hmm. then you're yeah. talking hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to pay for the medical care before you even get there.
Yeah.
To that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going back to neutrophils and mm-hmm. neutropenia. So, you know, someone like me who always has dips and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a kind of a roller coaster of neutrophils over the course yeah. of the month, and your medical screening asks about that. Like, can you go away with when you're neutropenic? What's the advice?
It's not advisable to do that. If you know you're neutropenic, it's not advisable. And if you spoke to your team, they would probably say you shouldn't go. What we do ask is, has your treatment been delayed at all because of your bloods? So normally, you know, with our treatment, you have your week off, your bloods come back up. So at the moment, I'm sort of running to the end of my treatment cycle. My neutrophils are probably bouncing around 0.9, yeah. 0.8 at the moment. But I know when I have my week off next week, they'll go back up to over one. And so then you can have your treatment. So I think if your treatments had to be delayed, that's what we want to understand. If you're not bouncing back after your break, that would be the question that we're asking. But if your team were seeing that you were low all the time, they probably wouldn't give you the okay to travel either.
But if you were going to the south of France, let's say, yeah. in your car or on the Eurostar or whatever, and you knew your neutrophils were usually around 0.9, say, mm-hmm. would you still travel, or would you say it would be better to have a treatment break?
I would then probably talk to my team and yeah. say, I'm going away. Will I stop taking my tablets early? And sometimes it's only even stopping your tablets a couple of days beforehand.
Yeah.
But again, you've got to discuss it with your team. They know you best. They yeah. are the ones that see your bloods
yeah,
and understand that.
And I think it's very much the balance, because, you mm-hmm. know, this for us with secondary breast cancer is for life.
Yeah.
And so you want to be able to go on holiday with your family or your friends or whoever and have a good time and have that moment where you forget
yeah.
about cancer. And I think for me, it very much depends on, because I have letrozole is kind of the backbone of my yeah. treatment, and letrozole doesn't cause you to be neutropenic.
No.
And so when I go on holiday, wherever it is, I'm still always taking the letrozole, mm-hmm. and that one doesn't, you know, it gives me side effects like hot flushes, but hot flushes aren't life-threatening. No. So I can stop the ribociclib for a couple of weeks mm-hmm. without concern that my cancer is going to suddenly come back, because that's mm-hmm. not the main drug yeah. keeping the cancer at bay. But obviously, if it was a case where someone's having chemo or they're only on one drug and they need mm-hmm. to be able to stop that drug and they want to go away for a month or
yeah.
6 months or whatever it may be, then that's, I guess, where you'd have to have a real conversation about, know, is there a risk that by stopping this treatment, your cancer could
yeah.
flare up?
So, you really need to talk to your team. And as I say, they know you the best. They understand you, where you are. They see the scans, the bloods. They'll be best able to decide, you know, how long a break
yeah.
you can have. I mean, lots of people on chemotherapy jiggle around with it so they can have a holiday and feel well on that holiday. And that's perfectly natural. And they do all that with their team, just say, oh, can I delay it for a week?
Yeah. So one of the key questions really is, has your doctor said it's okay yeah. for you to travel?
Yeah.
Yes or no? And mm-hmm. if the answer really is no, then
yeah,
you can't get insurance, so.
No, and that's a market thing, because,
yeah, of
you
course,
know,
yeah.
it's everybody would say no to that, because,
absolutely, yeah.
you know, they know you best, and they've got to, and you've got to listen to that. I mean, much as everybody wants to get on holiday, you've got to listen to them, but then have that conversation, you know, how can I get, you know, what can I do to get into position that you would give me, or you know, or where would you recommend I travel to? It might be, well, actually, maybe just get the train over to France. We'd rather you didn't fly. Things like that.
Yeah. And it can flying be more of a risk to our health?
I always say that you see what happens to packets of crisps when you go on an aeroplane.
Oh, yeah.
That's your body's doing that as well. So it's the compression when you fly?
I think. Yeah.
When you fly. So it is still quite, even on a fit body, it's a lot. So, and, you know, our bodies are doing an awful lot, you know.
Yeah.
And it can really take a toll on the body, on your body. And you can sometimes come off a flight feeling quite unwell.
Yeah. I know certainly that I have travelled lots of times and come off a plane and found that I've got a really bad cough and cold or whatever. Because I think whether it has an effect on your immune system or not, I think just being in an enclosed space with lots of people, inevitably there's always someone coughing around
always.
You. And do you have any thoughts on masks? Do you wear masks on planes?
No, but I did consider it this time. Just because there was so many, we've just come back from holiday and it was just after all the kids have gone back to school, but there was loads of toddlers on our flight.
Yeah.
And, you know, just they're walking colds at the best of times. And I just thought, I probably should be wearing it. I didn't, but that's what really prompted me to think about it on the flight home. So many toddlers.
One thing I always do is, so hand gel, I always have hand gel, and I've been carrying hand gel for long before the pandemic, since I had chemo 13 years ago. I've always had hand gel. But I also take wipes and I get as soon as I get on a plane, get my wipes out. I wipe down the tray table and the arms of the chair and maybe just like the front of it. And if it's a long haul flight and I've got the TV screen on the back of the plane, then I or wipe all that down and stuff. And I think just a little bit of that, you know.
Yeah, I do that too. I don't, you know, it's just, we've just got to be so careful with germs.
Mm.
And again, I always, it's, you know, the minute I come in from being outside or being on the bus or being on the tube, wash my hands, try not to put my hands anywhere near my mouth.
Yeah.
If I haven't washed them after being on the bus or the tube. And as soon as I can, I wear my gloves. So you're holding on to everything.
Yeah. If we're travelling within the UK, do you still need to get travel insurance or is it just for abroad?
You don't need to, but if it depends on the cost of your holiday. So, for example, you know, you might be renting a cottage in Cornwall and they're not cheap, but your health depends on that holiday happening. And say you're taken ill before you go away, you've got... And you need to cancel that. You might have lost all your money on that expensive cottage in Cornwall. But that's where travel insurance would kick in. But normally in the UK, if you've got an annual travel insurance policy, you're covered provided you've got 2 nights pre-booked accommodation.
Okay.
So it's automatically covered under an annual travel insurance policy. But if you were to take out a single trip policy, then you can do it for 1, 2 nights, whatever you want within the UK.
Okay.
But also, you know, say you lived in the north of Scotland and you were travelling down to this cottage in Cornwall and you're taken ill, you know, travel insurance would help you get back up to your local hospital and things like that.
Okay.
So it's always useful and it's not as expensive as trying to get travel insurance for abroad because there's no medical costs because it's NHS. So it's mainly cancellation costs and things like that would be covered for there.
And on that note, at what point should you book your travel insurance?
So it's always advisable to book as soon as you book your holiday.
Yeah.
However, depending on where you are in your cancer treatment, it might not be possible. So, you know, particularly if you're booking now for next summer, you know, because you want to get, you've got kids and you want to get the cheapest holidays, we might not be able to cover you until 2 months before you travel, just depending on, say, if it needs to be a specialist medical screening. We can only cover 12 months in advance.
Okay. And can you get the cover, but then if anything changes, let's say, for example, if you need a surgery or if your drugs change during the period in between booking your trip and going on your trip, what do you do then?
You just need to phone and update your medical records. Now, it might be that you charge an additional premium because the risk has changed, or in some circumstances, they might say, well, actually, we can't cover you anymore. But the cover that you would have the cover to cancel the holiday and get your money back.
Right. Okay.
From because of the cancellations there. But we just can't cover you to travel anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Depending on what's happened. But you just make a claim on the cancellation aspect.
And if you are a person going through cancer treatment and you want to travel with others, for example, your partner or your children, dependents, do you put them on the same policy? You need to get their insurance through insurance with as well?
It's always advisable. If the travel depends on you, and if you're not going, the holiday's not happening, everybody should be on your policy with your condition declared. Because if they had, say, travel insurance with the bank and you can't go because you've picked up an infection, for example, you'd be able to cancel and get your money back. But because your cancer hadn't been declared on the bank policy, they wouldn't be able to make a claim. Even if you paid for the holiday, say you paid for everybody to go on holiday, you would only get your portion of that back. And lots of people seem to get a bit confused about that. They think that, well, actually, I'm the one with cancer. I've declared my cancer. I've paid for everybody to go. So I've got everybody covered under my policy because I've paid for it. But that's not, it's only you that's covered under. You've got to name the people on that policy.
Yeah. It's a lot to think about.
It's really an awful lot to think about. And that does trip a lot of people up, especially if they're making a cancellation claim.
Yeah.
And then they find out that it's only them that's covered.
Yeah. And are there certain countries around the world where it's even more expensive to get coverage when you have a cancer condition?
Not a cancer condition. It's travel insurance. So the most expensive country for travel insurance is Mexico.
Yeah.
Then we go step down from Mexico is Canada, America, Caribbean.
Yeah.
That's the second most expensive. And then it would be the rest of the world.
Yes.
Sort of cover after that. And then Europe, or sometimes Europe excluding Spain and Europe including Spain, because Spanish healthcare is very expensive.
I see.
So that's why Spain is sometimes not included. You've got to include it rather than, or you can buy
exclude
a Europe policy excluding Spain.
Yeah.
And that will be slightly cheaper than a Europe policy, including Spain.
And why is Mexico so much more expensive?
Health costs, again.
Okay.
Really, really expensive health costs.
Okay. And what about mental health? So, for example, I think a lot of people just wouldn't think to declare mental health issues when buying travel insurance. Mm-hmm. But this is something that's come up with me, because when you put your drugs on the insurance with medical screening, I am taking an antidepressant because it's come from my secondary breast cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I actually don't know many people with secondary breast cancer
that
who don't have some kind of related depression or anxiety because it really, really affects you emotionally.
Yeah.
But where does that come in terms of travel insurance?
You should, I mean, again, it's a really underdeclared condition. And you know, we always stress that if you've got a mental health condition, you take medication for it, you should declare it on your travel insurance. But you should also, you know, research where you're traveling to. And depending on what your mental health condition is, understand how different countries treat mental health conditions.
Can you explain? Is there an example?
So it's really, you know, I don't have that sort of, you know, if you've got sort of maybe a schizophrenia or something like that, and you might have an episode when you're abroad, sort of the understanding of that type of mental health, say, in Far East countries would be less. And, you know, how you would be treated in hospital
right
would not be what you would expect in this country.
Okay.
things like that. So just you think about and look at, you know, Mind's a great charity and you know, they've got some great pieces about traveling with mental health conditions and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's always advisable to do your research and look at the countries that you're traveling to, particularly, you know, different countries in Far East and things like that. Yeah. They don't sort of treat mental health the way we do in this country. And your experience will be quite different.
Yeah. Even if mental health issues are just another side effect of your breast cancer treatment.
That's it. I'm talking about the, you know,
severe mental health
yeah. conditions. Okay. It's, you know, as we were talking about that. But normally, you know, with, you know, us taking antidepressants and things like that, the chances of us having a sort of episode when we're away is quite remote.
Absolutely.
Because it's, I mean, that's why we take the pills.
Yeah.
to manage it all, yeah.
And also, if I was on holiday the whole time, I probably wouldn't need to take them. Okay. And so there are a few quite specific and difficult examples to look at with insurance. So there is a question about, I think, whether you've been given... Well, actually, I had a question around the word terminal in insurance terms, because we sometimes can use the word terminal as a synonym for incurable or metastatic or secondary. Mm-hmm. But actually, am I right in thinking that in insurance terms, terminal usually would mean that you've been told you have 6 months or less to live?
There's no... Yeah, so terminal is really an unhelpful term.
Yeah.
In insurance, it's something we don't use.
Okay.
Because it is unhelpful. It's not, even I think your doctor giving you the news that you've got a secondary breast cancer, I don't think they would use the word it's terminal.
No.
I don't think it's not, I don't think it's even defined what terminal is in the NHS. So it's so loose and nobody really understands what it means, and it's not defined. And, you know, the NHS don't say, you know, by terminal, we mean X, Y or Z. Yeah. They just don't do it. So we find that really unhelpful. But I see loads of people asking that question.
Yeah.
And again, it's, yeah, it's an industry thing. You know, they will say, have you been given a terminal diagnosis?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes or no. And but again, it depends on, you know, have you been given 6 months or less to live? Well, it actually depends on if you've asked or not.
Exactly. Yeah, so, it really does.
You know, if you don't want to know, you don't ask the question.
Yeah.
That information is not going to be volunteered to you by your consultant.
Yeah, I got you.
So,
and I think that was something that came up for me on other insurance sites, health screenings. Mm-hmm. But what comes up on the insurance with form is, have you reached a point where the doctor says you cannot be cured, so treatment is intended to extend and or improve the quality of your life?
Yeah.
So in that case, can you still insure someone or is that an automatic no?
No, that's just us trying to understand,
okay,
you know, where you are, have you got an incurable disease, basically?
Yeah.
And that's us asking that question. So you would answer that. And then there would be the next question after that it would go to, I believe, is it would ask, have you been given less than 6 months to live? You haven't asked, or no.
Oh, okay.
And even if you've been given less than 6 months to live, that doesn't mean you're not going to get cover.
Right.
But what we would probably want at that stage would be push that through to our one-to-one screening, where you'd speak directly to a member of our medical screening team and they'd just ask a few more questions. If you say you don't want to know, that would still flip through to online and would ask a few more questions, understanding where you are with your bloods and things like that.
Okay. Because I guess what I'm asking with that is, you know, end of life, the very difficult point that that people do reach, obviously, it often at the end of life, if someone is well enough to go on maybe a little trip, they might want that trip of a lifetime just to make some memories with their loved ones. And so it is, you're saying it is so possible, it is, not so in that's every why, case.
Not in every
course,
case, but. No. But that's why we recognise that. And that's why we basically take that offline and talk to the person, understand, you know, what were your last bloods? Where are you? Ask them far more detailed questions. We might restrict where we're willing to cover them for. So if somebody said, well, I want to go to Florida and swim with the dolphins, and it'd be like, no, you know, you're immunocompromised and not that long flight. But we can cover you to go to Europe.
Yeah.
And things like that. So it's, again, it might restrict where you can go to, but not necessarily. It depends on... But again, I know people that have also been given less than 6 months to live, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're still going strong. And so, yeah, so that's what it needs. We just need to ask more questions and understand.
Okay. So, yeah. So if you just can't get insurance, but you're desperate to travel and you really think that it's important for your quality of life, then it would be a case of going at your own risk, but choosing somewhere that you realistically could afford to get home from.
And easily.
Yeah.
Because it's, and don't think you can get on a flight.
Yeah. And we're really talking in this conversation about worst case scenarios. Yeah.
Chances are that will happen is remote.
Yeah.
But when it does, it will cost you a fortune.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. On some of the more difficult questions, I guess, can it be harder to get travel insurance if the cancer has spread to certain places, like, for example, the brain?
The outcome now for brain mets is so much better than it ever was. So what we would ask if somebody's had saber knife, radiotherapy, gamma knife or surgery, we would say 12 weeks.
So you can't travel within 12 weeks of having those treatments?
No, we wouldn't, we wouldn't look to cover.
And is that because of side effects?
Yeah. Okay. Again, make sure all the swelling's down. You know, we are, although having said that, we are actually consulting with a brain cancer charity and we've done some workshops with them and we're looking to understand whether 12 weeks is still appropriate.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, the outcomes from these treatments, particularly gamma knife and saber knife, is so much better than, say, whole brain radiotherapy was. And even, you know, the way the treatments are changing, you know, is 12 weeks still appropriate? So we are in a consultation process at the moment to say whether it's still going to stay at 12 weeks or whether we can reduce it down.
I really love that about insurance, with that, you know, there's a human behind it and there are other humans behind it, obviously, on your on your team. And you do things like that consulting. Like, it's not just we'll have a certain policy that's 12 weeks and we'll leave it that way forever without review.
No.
Really thinking about
Sophie it. Sophie and the team that run Protective, they are always looking at ways, they're always researching to see, are our rules still appropriate? Because cancer treatment just moves so quickly. The outcomes are getting so much better for people with cancer. But we as insurers have got to recognise that as well and act appropriately. And that's what Sophie and her team do at Protective. And, you know, and that's why, as I say, we work with lots of charities and user groups to understand how we ask the questions, but also the answers to those questions and outcomes of treatments.
Yeah. And just talking about those 12 weeks, so surgeries, not just brain surgeries, but any surgery.
Any surgery, we're looking at 12 weeks.
Yeah. So I had a surgery a couple of years ago and I was booking a holiday for 8 months ahead.
Yeah.
So the surgery was in the January and I was booking a holiday for August. Mm-hmm. But because I was booking the insurance when I would book the holiday, it said, have you had surgery in the last 12 weeks? And the answer was yes, but it wasn't going to be the case in August when I was going to be going on the holiday. So I couldn't get insurance, or it was much more expensive. Yeah. I can't really remember, but are there ways around that? Like, should you wait?
That would be the cancellation risk.
Right.
So because the 12 weeks hadn't passed, we weren't how all that would, you know, has it healed? Is it going to heal properly?
Got it.
And things like that. So ended up not healing very well,
yeah,
and you couldn't go on that holiday, then that's the cancellation expense. So it's that cancellation risk at that point.
And can you book your holiday and your insurance before your surgery, knowing you're having surgery? Or do you have to say, I'm going to be having surgery and...
Yeah, so they would want to know the outcome of the surgery.
Yeah. Okay.
So we will cover certain conditions while you're waiting for treatment.
Yeah.
So if the surgery's after your holiday, then that's okay.
Of course, yeah.
But if the surgery, if you're booking your insurance and you're having surgery before you travel, or
yeah,
anything before you travel, we would want to know about that. You know,
yeah,
even if you're starting radiotherapy, chemotherapy, we wouldn't be able to do that if that's happening before,
yeah,
the holiday.
Okay, yeah. So basically the thing that really affects insurance in, mm-hmm, all cases is anything that's new. So,
yeah,
a new surgery, a new drug that you're starting,
mm-hmm,
or any new side effects,
yeah,
potentially. And that's not to say that any of those things will stop you from getting insurance,
no,
but they... need to be declared.
Yeah,
basically.
So what we're looking for is stability, not,
yeah,
necessarily stability in the cancer, but stability on your treatment.
Yeah.
So that's stability. Everything's managed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stuff that you just would not know as a regular,
no,
person, perhaps going through your cancer treatment and,
yeah,
wanting to book a holiday. You just wouldn't, you just,
no,
you don't
just want
understand
your holiday
that all
and there
of
is
those...
so, you've got so much that you've got to understand.
Yeah.
The last, all you want to do is do something nice, like book a holiday, but unfortunately, yeah, there's, it's complex.
Yeah. Some people diagnosed with breast cancer might want to try something like life, once in a lifetime kind of thing, like a high adrenaline, skydiving, skiing, whitewater rafting or something,
yeah,
like that. Are there additional things that you need to consider if you... getting insurance for cancer treatment if you want to do something like that?
So some of the stuff that you've just mentioned there, we wouldn't be able to cover,
okay,
under insurance with. There are policies that would cover that, but they might not cover your cancer. And that's the sort of trade-off sometimes.
Mm.
You know, we do cover skiing. You just need to make sure you take out a winter sports cover. Unfortunately, those specific policies that do those adrenaline junkie type holidays, yeah, probably wouldn't cover the cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the films, the movies and the TV shows have a lot to answer for.
Yes. Because
they make us think that when someone is diagnosed with cancer, they book a holiday and they do a skydive and they do all these crazy,
yeah,
crazy things. And they never think about the fact that you've got to get travel insurance
for all these things
and all the logistics behind it.
Yeah.
Can you travel abroad if you're having a clinical trial?
Yes, absolutely. And that seems to, lots of people seem to think that they can't. No, they can absolutely travel abroad. What we ask about, the reason we ask about clinical trials is the bit that's not covered is if the trial says, oh, we're moving something, the date, and it's the date you're on holiday, we won't cover for cancellation. Because your trial date's been moved.
Got it.
Or if you're on holiday and your trial says, actually, we need you to come home because we want to check something. None of that's not covered. Mm-hmm. So any curtailment or cancellation of a holiday due to trial dates moving is not covered. But because you're on a trial drug doesn't mean you're not covered.
Okay. And what about people who are working and need business travel insurance? So perhaps they're, and like, let's say, for example, if I've got annual multi-trip, mm-hmm, travel insurance, and mostly it's for holidays, but might have a go abroad to a conference or something.
Yeah.
Is that all one and the same, or do you need separate insurance?
So normally under a general travel insurance policy, you can go abroad for business, provided you're not actually doing manual work.
Yeah.
So for conferences and things like, yeah, that's covered. But if you're actually doing manual work or things like that when you're abroad, that is the responsibility of your employer.
Okay, got you. Well, I've drilled you with all those practical technical questions, but on a cheerier note, Insurance With donates loads of money to amazing charities, including,
yeah,
cancer charities. Can you tell us a bit about that work and why it's important to you?
Yeah, so when I was first diagnosed, I wouldn't have been able to get through my cancer with a baby and no family support on the ground when we lived in London without the help of charities. So when we were setting up Insurance With, it was really important to me that we had a facility to be able to donate to charity. So for every policy that's sold, we donate £1 into the Insurance Swift Charitable Fund, and we donate that to various different charities. Over the years, we've donated over £250,000 to charities, mainly cancer charities. Lots of charities come to us for support for events that they're putting on, and we donate money to them for that. So it's something, that's one of, the proudest things, that I think we do with Insurance Swift, the support that we give to charities. And it's like supporting the charities that support our customers.
Yeah. Fantastic.
It's really important to us.
Well, thank you for doing that. Yeah, it's fantastic to see as well. And do you have any practical tips for anyone travelling with breast cancer not related to insurance? So, for example, I always take the compression socks, the hand gel, the wipes. I sometimes even take a thermometer just to see if I've got a temperature.
Yeah, I mean, all of that is great advice. One of the things I would stress, and a lot of people forget about, is depending on the drugs that you take, particularly if you take opioid painkillers, check they're legal in the country you're going to. If they're not, doesn't mean you can't take them. There's just a bit more form filling to do. All the information's on the Foreign and Commonwealth website. But always check that, particularly if you take Oromorph. So I quite often travel with Oromorph because of my bone mets. I don't take it all the time. I only take it for flare-ups. I can't remember the last time I took it. But again, some countries, you need to have filled a form in before you can take that.
Yeah, that's
advice. My top tip, because we do travel with an awful lot of drugs.
Yeah. I've had a couple of my things that I always do are, I always put all of my medication in my hand luggage.
Yes.
Because if your checked baggage goes AWOL, then you've lost all your medication.
Stays with me.
Losing your clothes. I also travel with my acupuncture needles because I do self-acupuncture by the NHS. And I'm always like, where do I put my acupuncture needles? They're just like tiny little sealed needles, but those I always put in the hold luggage.
Yeah, because if you're taking them on a flight, so it's a bit like people that inject insulin.
Yeah.
They've got to let the airline know that they're traveling with needles.
Yeah.
Or anything that requires an injection.
Of course,
you need to let the airline know. My other top tip, actually, talking about airlines, is Fit to Fly letter.
Yeah.
You might, I always have one as a matter of course, because I don't know how I'm going to feel when I rock up at the airport. So I might be having a day when my bone mets are flaring, I'm in a bit of pain, and I need a bit of assistance at the airport. And there'll be some airlines, if you ask for assistance, they'll say, yep, that's fine, but have you got Fit to Fly letter?
Right.
So it's always handy to have, because you just don't know if you might be asked for it if you ask for assistance.
Yeah.
So it's always handy to have. And I would always ask for that at least 2 to 3 weeks before I'm going away.
Yeah.
Just to make sure, because it can. Yeah. You can normally get that from your GP, your breast care nurse will be able to do it for you.
Yeah.
But give them plenty. They won't be able to do it overnight.
Yeah. I just had I don't think it was an official Fit to Fly letter, but I just had my oncologist write Laura is safe to go to wherever.
Something like that, even if, your breast care nurse, just something. If you ask for assistance, the airlines can ask for Fit to Fly.
Got it. Yeah. And then one final thing that I think sometimes you can get is you can ask your medical team if there are any drugs that you can take as in case if something happens. So like a general antibiotic. But I think that they're not really supposed to do it.
But no, some will give you that, but some will say no.
Yeah.
But again, one of the good things about the Insurance Swift policy is the air doctor, so if you do have an infection, they can write a prescription for you and you can get that filled, because it is mainly the antibiotics for infection. Or they might advise you to take prophylactic antibiotics when you're traveling, depending on where you're traveling to.
And of course, almost all of what we've talked about today is very much just in case.
Yeah.
We're just protecting ourselves in case mm-hmm. anything happens on holiday. But the majority of holidays go without hitch yeah. and we're there to have a lovely time.
Yeah. And it can be frightening after the conversation we've just yeah. had. But trust me, the chances of things going wrong like that are very remote.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the insurance is there just in case. But when it does kick into action, you're always glad you've got it.
Yeah. How do people find insurance with and get that quote? What's your website? And
so it's insurancewith.com. Yep, so you can get a quote online. If you've got any issues, there's a call centre. You can book a call with us if you don't want to wait in a call queue. Because it can get really busy, particularly, you know, sort of this time of year, the phones. But there's an option for you to book a call for somebody to call you back.
Brilliant. And if people stay on until the end of this episode, we're going to put a 20% off code as well that our listeners can apply to get that discount. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to finish with the question we're asking everyone on this podcast.
Okay.
Breast Cancer Now's vision is that by 2050... everyone diagnosed with breast cancer will not only live, but be supported to live well. What does it mean to you to live well?
It means everything to live well. To, you know, as we discussed at the beginning, to see my son graduate. I want to be able to see him get married. I want, you know, to see his children, but be well enough to enjoy it. But I think because I've been living with cancer for 20 years, I have seen the change in the treatments coming along. Mm. And as my oncologist says now, we laugh at what we gave you 20 years ago because it's just come on in leaps and bounds. And I think, gosh, in another 20 years, we'll nearly be at 2050. Where will we be?
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I definitely think we'll get there.
Yeah, and fingers crossed people will be able to travel
yeah.
and enjoy their lives with breast cancer mm-hmm. on the sidelines, as it were.
Yeah, and it's just another chronic condition that people live with.
Yeah. Fiona, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for all the wonderful wealth of information and for everything that you do with Insurance With as well.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
To help provide you with further choice if you're looking around for travel insurance, Fiona has provided us with a discount code for Insurance With. Just go to the show notes in this episode and you'll find that discount code there. If you enjoyed this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them. You can find support and information on our website, breastcancernow.org, and you can follow Breast Cancer Now on social media @BreastCancerNow. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast.